Hello, everyone. Welcome to Peas in a Pod
Cast.
I'm Nathan.
I'm Sia.
I'm Henry.
And I'm Subin.
And we are a group of four students who are passionate about psychology. And we've come together, like peas in a pod, to discuss the world of psychology and its role in our lives. In this episode, we're going to be talking about self-esteem. Right, and I think we should just begin by defining what it is. So, Sia, could you like just define it for us, maybe in your own terms?
Personally, I think self-esteem is a matter of self-evaluation, whether an individual thinks about himself or herself as a positive aspect or negative aspect, and it really hugely depends on the social identity of an individual, which is where social identity theory is actually used to explain the concept of self-esteem. There are two major measurements that you can measure your self-esteem that is often used by social psychologists. One is Rosenberg self-esteem scale, which is an explicit measure. So it based on the scale that from 1 to 4, the higher scores on the scale indicate more higher self-esteem. So for example, when the question is given, such as I feel that I have a number of good qualities, or I feel I do not have much to be proud of, based on how well you disagree or agree, you rate yourself based on the scale, so that it indicates how your self-esteem is really high. The another measurement that you can use is implicit measure. So it provides a more accurate self-concept, because they're less influenced by the desire to make a positive impression, which is further explored in the experiment that we are going to discuss later.
And so just to clarify, this is the type of stuff, like, you know, if one of us were to go into like therapy, into a, like, with some psychologist,
yes,
like this is what they would use to like assess, mm-hmm, us, right?
Yes.
And so essentially what self-esteem is this perception of yourself and how, I guess, good you are relatively to other people in society, other people you interact with. And it's like a self-image of yourself,
yeah,
basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the fact that you can numerically measure how, like, your level of your self-esteem is really nice to have, because then you can numerically just see how you value yourself in terms of self-esteem.
Hold on, but what would that mean? You can measure it yourself? Like, do you measure your own self-esteem?
I mean, like, based on the Rosenberg scale, there's a few questions you ask yourself, right? And based on how strongly you agree with each statement, that kind of like compiles into your score. But
yeah, I mean, I think you can measure yourself with those questions.
I mean, personally, I don't think you can like measure self-esteem. It's something that fluctuates more, I guess. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not one stat. It's not. There's no statistic to it. It doesn't. You know, you're not 9 out of 10 self-esteem, like.
Yeah, you can. It doesn't exactly say where you're at in that scale, but you still get hot. Like, if you strongly believe in yourself, or if you're like, it clearly tells you if you have high self-esteem or low self-esteem.
It is there just to help an individual to indicate about how they perceive themselves.
Yeah,
it's not something that you can use like for psychological therapy, or like you cannot quantify yourself just based on self-esteem scale. So I think you just use it for an index as a reference, but not as like specific measurement.
Like, would you guys agree that when we have low self-esteem, or when we have especially high self-esteem, it's more of a biased outlook on yourself?
You mean like an outward?
Biased perspective of yourself, I guess. Like,
it's always going to be biased,
do you think,
right?
Do you think there's some bias to self-esteem?
I mean, I think it's really interesting, because it really depends on your culture and where you grow from. Because if you look at into those Asian cultures where people are too shy in a way to come up, like, they're too shy to speak up in front of the crowds and stuff, because and that may relate to the self-esteem, while
because your self-esteem is like not just connected to yourself, but it's connected to your group as well,
right?
And so whatever actions you do are going to be reflective of your group. Like other groups or like other people will see your actions as part of the group. So you kind of have your group's esteem, your group self-esteem on your own shoulders.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't want to mess anything up.
And it's kind of interesting because that dives really deeply into how different cultures have different cultural values.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned before, in Asian cultures, one's more afraid to speak out or stick out in a group of people. So I guess that ties neatly into the theory of individualism and collectivism.
Yeah, the cultural dimension by Husserl.
In Western societies, they're more individualistic. They enjoy achievements and they they're more motivated by rewards in the short run, I guess.
Yeah. I also want to touch on that topic you mentioned of like self-esteem being something that's. Like it changes, fluctuates, right?
Yeah.
There's like you have moments where you like yourself, and then you have other moments when you just hate yourself. Does that mean does everyone have like an average self-esteem then?
I mean, an average kind of implies that there's some sort of quantification going on, and I feel like self-esteem is more of a qualitative. I guess.
Yeah, it's actually the indicator.
You know, and rarely do you ever rate your own self-esteem. You just have one perception of yourself, right? There are times where you're feeling very happy and you're feeling very confident relative to others in society. You know, and so then you consider yourself to have high self-esteem, and then there are times where you have low self-esteem. But rarely do we, take a holistic approach. Everything into consideration, and that's why I say it could be biased. How most of the time it's based on like one thing. For example, you get a low test score in your math class, and then your self-esteem would be very, very low, despite you having an average of an A or something like that.
Yeah. It's kind of like how like people like often we get confused between people who are who have actual depression and people who are just feeling kind of low, and like. I was wondering, like, when you think of someone with lowest self-esteem, like, what comes to mind? You know, it's not someone who's, like, feeling down. It is someone who's always, like, critical of themselves, right, of everything they do. And then you think of maybe someone who's, like, got really high self-esteem. Maybe they're, like, too proud of, they think of themselves really high.
In a way, you can say that they're egoistic.
Yeah.
But then, I wouldn't say being egoistic isn't a bad thing, because... It means you have high self-esteem.
Yeah, there's a perception
It means you have high self-efficacy.
Yeah.
You believe that you'll achieve something. You believe that you can do something.
Yeah.
And I guess that's more of sometimes it can be a positive bias where self-efficacy actually helps you complete a certain task.
So on that note, I think we should get into like the first real study to like kind of show the evidence for what we're like claiming here about self-esteem. So Henry, you want to guide us through this experiment?
And before we talk about the experiment, let's talk about how, I guess, social identity theory relates to self-esteem. You know, and one key aspect I'd like to highlight is the social comparison component of social identity theory.
Mm-hmm.
And social comparison states that we're constantly comparing ourselves to... We're constantly comparing our in-group to the out-group, I mean, which is like, I guess, a little bit different from personal self-esteem, but...
Yeah.
But we have to... Yeah, but the social identity theory is pointing out that the personal self-esteem has high vulnerability to be affected by the group.
Mm-hmm.
So, social identity theory is composed of four different steps. So you first do the social categorization where you divide yourself and categorize into the in-groups and the out-groups. So you clearly know which group you're at. And
so basically it's indicating that people see, you know, social relations, people group themselves, and people particularly put themselves in groups and also put others in groups.
Yeah, like we literally go and like, you see someone, you say, that's not one of me, like that's, they're not one of us.
That process is called social identification, because it's like when we adopt the identity of the group that we're categorized, you're gonna understand, oh, what behavior is appropriate to do within the group.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you clearly immerse yourself to the in-group social norms, while like you try to compare in groups and out groups, which is called as a social comparison. So it actually by making the comparisons between the groups, it actually helps an individual to seek positive social identity so that it can maintain and enhance their self-esteem, and which is called positive distinctiveness. So when a social group is made to be appear more positive and valued, it gives you a more successful intergroup discrimination, which will want to elevate self-esteem. And this is supported by Cialdini experiment or Robert's cave experiment.
It's that sense of belonging, and it's a very human nature to self-esteem.
Well, once you have belonging, like you want it to be cemented, and that's when like the social identity thing comes. You want your group to be strong. You try to make sure you're definitely in the group, mm-hmm. and then you want don't want other people.
To ruin that,
like especially people who you don't identify with the same with, you know, that's where your own self-esteem starts to come up.
So there's this really interesting study that I'd like to bring up. It's called the Robert's Cave Experiment. It's an experiment done in the mid 20th century, so the 1950s, and essentially what happens in this study is the researchers bring a group of kids to a summer camp, like a week-long camping trip, I guess. And what they did was they didn't only bring one group of, and to note, this was only done with, groups of boys. So they brought two groups of boys, and
they were named as the Eagles and the Rattlers?
They first bring two groups of boys separately to this camp, right? And yeah. After days of them bonding and like having activities together, in their own separate groups, and like that resulted to them resulted to the point where they attributed some sort of identity.
The boys pick the names themselves.
Yeah,
the groups.
They pick their names.
The boys are allowed to choose.
And then they would like refer to themselves as, "Well, I'm an eagle," and like.
Yeah.
And
so they are self-identified.
That's the social identification step of the Robert's Cave experiment.
Yeah.
And so what happened after all that bonding and all that interactions, all that inner group interactions was, on the fourth day or so, what they did was they brought the boys together and they subjected them to a bunch of competitions between the groups. So there was a little bit of that intergroup rivalry going on.
And it was kind of like pushed on here, like they wanted to instigate it, right? To like competition.
Yeah, and what they found was that the boys reacted very, very, very hostile to the other group. And so there was a lot of intergroup conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically Sharif is arguing that when two groups are competing for the limited resource, the intergroup conflict will gonna occur. So this actually shows that how positive self-esteem can occur by the social identity where they belong to. So like positive self-esteem can be achieved when we see ourselves in a positive way. For example, when we get a good grade or when we do well on the sports team, so we get an award, then our self-esteem naturally rises. But also when we are positively perceived by the others. For example, when you get the honor roll and like people perceive you as like a smart kid, and especially if you're the person who cares a lot about your grades and like those academics, then your self-esteem will gonna rise much higher than you perceive yourself.
I also want to say that self-esteem doesn't need to like necessarily come from your own accomplishment, right?
What happened in the study was that by discriminating or by fighting or having these conflicts with the other group, you cement your position in your inner group, and therefore that lowers the self-esteem. That increases the self-esteem of the boys in the respective groups.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you're already in a group with your gangs, I think it already increases your self-esteem to a certain extent.
Yeah. Like what if, right? You're in a group, your group is together, and one of you suddenly wins the lottery, right?
Yeah, you
you feel
good.
You feel good. You feel like good, maybe good about yourself. I don't know. necessarily?
Sure. Or
what if like building on CS example, right? Yeah, you're all at the academic awards, right? And one of your people in your group gets
those
an award.
Honor rolls and stuff.
You feel your group status has been elevated.
Yeah, you feel
and you feel proud to be of the group, like your own
esteem, like, right? What essentially raises your own self-esteem is, I guess, pro-social behavior towards that one group member that, you know, won the lottery. Congratulating him or praising him kind of cements your position in that group. And one of the biggest takeaways from, like, why Robbers Cave is so important is it showed that when people are placed in groups, when people have the knowledge of belonging, or when they see groups, that drastically affects their behavior. If I guess the boys were subjected to the same type of activities, but the existence of another group wasn't really, you know, there, then their behaviors would have been completely different.
Hmm. Yeah, I think we could see this also in the second study we would like to bring up, which is the Cialdini study from mid 1970s.
30s.
Yeah, so they wanted to see if people's self identity was made salient, right? If they were made conscious of it, would they go in order to boost their self-esteem, would they go and emphasize their identity in that group,
right? The acknowledgement, right, of a group and how,
yes,
that affects their behavior.
So,
ultimately,
so what they did was, like, to observation, they went on these college campuses and they would observe students or I guess faculty as well, anyone on the campus, and see what the reception was towards the football game that happened the night before. So supposing the team had won, they would try to see what percentage of the people would try to maybe wear the college's sports apparel.
Try to embrace the in-group.
Yeah, want to be identified as part of that group that just won the game. Or if they lost the game, would that decrease the rate of the number of people that were wearing that? And they found that true. It was true. When the college football team lost the game,
they were less likely to wear the university clothes. And also during the interview, they would more likely to use the pronoun we, which is like more first person. So like they're basically indicating the in-group and they're more emphasizing that. But if the team loses the game, then they would likely to use the third person pronoun, which is they. So like they're trying to make a distinction between them.
So you can see them like trying to take the group's accomplishment to use to boost their self-esteem, or at least make themselves seem better in some way. Which is like clearly how social identity theory like relates to that whole the whole self-esteem part of our lives.
It's basically, if it's something that will increase the self-esteem, and they will accept the factor to their in-group, and if it won't, they will clearly say that, oh no, you don't belong in this group. And that's why they refer to the team as they or we, regarding the result of the game, of this football game.
Yeah, and this is why self-esteem is pretty important in our lives, because it really influences our behaviors and everyday choices that we make.
Very, very unconsciously, I would say. I don't think these people were realized, right? Like they were putting on that college sweater this morning because they wanted to
unconscious.
Yeah, I don't.
It's just the feeling of like, oh, like when our team wins, they're like, oh, let's like be more like participating in the university. Like let's cheer up. It's like probably it's like not very conscious. They don't notice that their self-esteem is high or low. Even for me, my self-esteem, I would say I'm pretty low if I think about very consciously. But I will not gonna always make my decisions like, oh, because my self-esteem is low, I will not gonna do well. Not like it's a very unconscious reaction that you're just gonna naturally show. And I think that's why it's also hard to quantify it and show that, oh, like this person's self-esteem is low because the quantification, the scores were low.
So guys, if there are any listeners out there with who I guess are feeling low or feeling a little bit down or just not having a good day and their self-esteem may be low, what's some potential advice we could give? Like, what would you say to them?
Well, clearly we've seen, like, you know, just I think the group stuff, right? The whole belonging to a group, and then using its success, I guess, as being more in order to be more happy and feel better about yourself. And
I mean,
the social interaction has always been like the kind of thing a natural humans have a natural tendency. They're social people. Mm-hmm. They want to interact with others.
But that doesn't mean that, like, you have to be very obsessive to getting into a group that looks cool and, like, very, like...
That's a good point,
group.
Yeah.
No, but being in a group and talking to some other people and sharing what you did, sharing your experience with someone else will definitely increase your self-esteem.
Right. And it's not just, like, I guess... I mean, it's not just being in a cool group, but rather, like, I guess...
Talking with the people.
Rather having a group to... be in, you know, like that identification of a group is just changes the way you behave, and that alone can give you positive
do you mean like belonging, like you have a place where you belong and maybe where people need you as well?
And as soon as you've identified your being group, as soon as you've I guess placed yourself in a hypothetical group, you automatically try to I guess make your in group appear much better than your outgroup, right? That's just something that that's also another aspect of social identity theory. You wanna benefit members of your in-group more than the outgroup. Right? And I feel like that also has a lot of evolutionary connections, you know? When long ago, when our ancestors were having to compete for limited resources, either with other you know, Homo sapiens or other species, that benefiting your own in-group has a significant effect on survival, has a significant effect on reproduction, and I guess you could even go as far to say that you know, having a strong in-group could potentially, I guess, increase your chances of survival.
Yeah, I would definitely say that Homo sapiens have survived and been so successful as a species because there's in those intergroup relations. Like the Neanderthals, right? They were also social beings. They were also quite prominent in Europe, but I guess they couldn't compete with Homo sapiens as much and had to die out.
And if you look at other species, that identification or that being in a herd or a group is quite common, has lots of effects because I guess you're much stronger as a group rather than on your own.
Yeah, definitely.
But also having too much self-esteem can make a negative aspect towards a person.
Yeah.
So I think that the perception is like, you know, whoever's got high self-esteem, they're always happy and they're always full
very
of themselves.
Confident.
Like, you should always try to have high self-esteem, kind of. But I guess, could you guide us maybe through what are the caveats of that?
I mean, it could obviously make you blind to your own faults, to your own, to your own... you know, weaknesses, and it's important that we constantly look at what we're lacking, because that's you know, if we can't see what we're lacking, then it's really, really hard to improve on ourselves. And yeah, too much self-esteem can kind of blind you from I guess wanting to improve yourself, you know, and you assume that you're already in a very, very good place because of high self-esteem. And
do you think like you're describing a narcissist basically, right? Like someone who's full of themselves, they can't see their own faults, they think of them so greatly. Do you think narcissists like don't get into groups? Do you think narcissists
get into groups? We see a lot of people.
When narcissists identify with other narcissists,
do they? Like, it's almost like they like you'd see think a narcissist doesn't need anyone else, right?
Right. To
feel content. Do they even like need groups?
It's like if you think of it on a spectrum, there's like, I guess, a narcissist will be on the far right end, and on the far left end there's, I guess,
someone who just cannot.
Those with like really, really low self-esteem.
Yeah.
But then I don't know. I think it's I think it's a societal responsibility to you know, help each other out and not put each other down, but rather I guess
where do narcissists get their self-esteem from? Because we're saying, like, you know, we get our self-esteem kind of a bit from our cultural identity, or maybe how our culture has the cultural stand, our culture's standards, and how we compare to that, and then, you know, that's how we kind of get our own self-esteem. But where do narcissists get there?
I think it's actually based on your childhood experience. So, like, for example, I had a friend who used to be narcissistic, and I think when I observed her as a friend, she actually had a parent who who always gave the compliments to her, and she was also like only daughter. So like it makes the focus of the parents like all given to her, so that actually shapes your mind that like, oh, probably I'm like the best, or like probably like I'm good, or like I have so much talent on me. So like I think it's really based on your childhood experience that makes you have a very strong self-esteem, which allows you to keep and maintain till you grow up.
Like a lot of who we are today kind of was developed through the development stage, where the interactions between parents and child, you know, that has a much more significant effect than who would normally think. And I mean, I'm not saying that that's the only effect, but you know, you have environment, you have culture, you even have biology.
But the major factor that we can discuss about as a cause of narcissistic.
Mm-hmm.
And also, definitely. I think narcissistic can only be broken when that person, when narcissistic person meets another person who are more talented than him
Superior.
Or her. Yeah. So like it will only be broken when I feel like, oh, I thought I have a lot of talent, but I now see a person who has much more talented than me. Then it will somehow give them the opportunity to break their self-esteem and like break their self-centeredness, so that they can actually now work on how to improve themselves.
Couldn't that possibly make them even more narcissistic? You see someone that's, let's say, someone that's even better than them. What if they think they're even better than the person that's seemingly better than them? Wouldn't that be a way?
I guess that's how they became how they became narcissistic, how they came to value themselves so much, and how they continue to do that. They maybe met people that.
Maybe
or in contact with people that just praise them, or maybe raise their own self-esteem through comparison.
Maybe they'll be ignorant, or maybe they'll ignore, I guess.
You mean denial?
To be in denial, to deny that there's, you know, someone can be better than them at something.
Well, I think now it's a bit harder to do that in such a specialized world where you always have someone who's like exceptionally good at something. It's just harder to be narcissistic, to think of yourself as greatly as such.
I actually have an example of this. So like I used to play piano when I was young, and then, you know, like the people for a talented piano comes to a contest and like everybody competes together. So I in terms of piano, I used to be kind of narcissistic, I guess, because I heard so many compliments to like saying that, oh, like you're only like 5 years old, but you can play that well. So I used to have like a lot of high self-esteem and high confidence about my playing level. But as soon as I meet someone who are just naturally like talented more than me, and like that person doesn't even really try that hard as much as I did, but they're just naturally like a genius. And I think that's when you actually think that, oh, probably I'm not that talented as much as other people do. But like, if narcissistic, I think it cannot be broken when you see someone that works hard and achieves something very superior. But in terms of narcissistic perspective, you just think, oh, it's from effort. Like, I'm just naturally good at it. I don't have to do that effort to do that thing. So I think that's when, like, probably your self-esteem cannot be like formed in a new way.
I mean, I think it also relates to how open your mind is, you know. The more you're open to other perspectives, the more you're, then it'll really help you see how you compare, and it'll really, I guess, the perception of your self-worth would be more accurate, I would say.
So obviously, you know, self-esteem has its benefits and has its downfalls, and I guess we want to, like, for a few minutes remind others why is it important to have a high self-esteem, I guess, in daily life, because it's emphasized so much, and we've kind of gone a little bit through why having high self-esteem is probably not a good thing. What are the maybe obvious benefits of having good self-esteem?
Well, I think it obviously builds your confidence, and
also it makes your mental state more stable. Mm-hmm. So like when you keep comparing yourself to others, it itself just makes your mental state very unstable at some point, because you keep thinking that like, oh, I'm such a bad kid, like I'm very not talented kid, and that actually harms to make a relationship with other people. It's just like, it makes myself hesitant about like why, like how to approach the people, I guess. And also it's sometimes, but I mean, having high self-esteem, it makes ourselves more confident, so that it makes us more assertive in expressing our opinions. So we don't hesitate when we want to speak up our opinions. And I think that's when a lot of people actually feel like, oh, we need to have a high self-esteem because we're so shy. Like, I cannot express what I want to.
Yeah, and obviously in any situation, the more perspectives you have on different people, the more, like, the better maybe the discussion is, mm-hmm. or more fruitful, yeah, that it would be. And so in general, I think that just means, you know, whenever possible, you're in any social situation, you want to try and make other people feel good about themselves.
Try not to be quick to judge.
Yeah, you know, kind of.
And not just judge others, but judge yourself in relation to others. Yeah.
So just try and give other people's self-esteem a chance to bloom as such. Anyway, we'd like to thank you so much for joining us on this discussion on self-esteem.
I hope we've broadened your knowledge of the concept of self-esteem and some of the theoretical understandings behind it.
Thank you so much. We'll see you next time on Peas in the Pod.
Cast.